6 years ago, top detective Steve Fulcher took on a case that would change his life.
It's a crime in action, it's a kidnap, and a girl's life is at stake.
It would bring him face to face with a serial killer, accused of kidnapping Sian O'Callaghan, a 22-year-old from Wiltshire.
Steve did what I think any family member would want an officer to do for them.
He did what he thought was necessary to save a life, but stretched the law to breaking point.
He breached rules. They were serious, they were deliberate, they were extraordinary.
Disciplined by the force that once admired him, his career was ruined.
My God, I couldn't believe what the police were doing.
Now, for the first time, Steve Fulcher reveals the dramatic story of his five-day search to rescue a kidnapped woman and bring a serial killer to justice.
If I assumed she was dead, then she would be dead, because there is no other cavalry that's coming.
The story began at a nightclub in Swindon. Sian O'Callaghan, a 22-year-old personal assistant, was on a night out with friends.
Sian was this wonderful girl who had a stable relationship with Kevin, nice family, parents were lovely. She'd gone out with friends, and then she decided to go home. The nightclub, CCTV, very murky, very grainy, showed her clearly alone, but you can see it's her. And you see her leave the club and go along the road. And that is it. She did not come home.
I had a phone call from my son, Liam, to say that her boyfriend, Kevin, had been concerned about Sian. He'd spoken to the police and reported her as missing.
We had police turn up to Kev's house in plain clothes. They looked serious. They'd segmented myself and Kevin, interviewed Kevin separately, interviewed me in the police car. That's when I started to realise something's not right.
Wiltshire police began a missing persons inquiry, checking hospitals, Sian's mobile phone records and bank details. Finding nothing, they intensified their search and brought in one of their top detectives.
Steve Fulcher was described by a previous chief constable of Wiltshire as probably the brightest detective he had. Very good with families, but a very good mind. He could get inside people's heads.
At about 6 o'clock on Saturday, the 19th of March, I was called by officers from Swindon Police Station. They decided at that time to escalate the issue to me as the on-call senior investigating officer for the force. I dropped everything and ran up to Swindon to work out precisely what lines of inquiry we should be instigating.
A telephone trace has thrown up a startling clue. At 3:24 a.m, half an hour after she left the club, the boyfriend sent her a text saying, worried. Her phone picked that up through a mobile mast in the Savanac Forest.
If Sian's alive, that's got to be searched. We've got to try and find her. We've got to do it urgently.
The forest is approximately 15 miles from the nightclub, a distance only manageable by car within that time frame.
Working on the hypothesis that she could have been kidnapped and was still alive, I conducted this investigation as a crime in action. That means everything else is subordinate to the notion of finding Sian and seeking to save her life. if I assumed she was dead, then she would be dead, because there is no other cavalry that's coming. It's me and my team or nothing.
Scouring Savanac Forest, Sian's family and friends joined police today in the hunt for her. Even people who don't know her turned up to help.
It seemed like one minute it was on the television and the next thing it was hundreds of people out of Savanac. It was very surreal seeing it all.
It couldn't be harder. A 6.5 mile radius of the Savanac Forest. Now, clearly, that in any terms is a difficult search issue, and I haven't got explicit locations that I can pinpoint a search parameter around.
With the search of Savanac Forest failing to find Sian, Diaz Fulcher badly needed a breakthrough. All he had to go on were the grainy CCTV images.
There was a number of us, I don't know, 4 or 5 of us, looking at a tiny screen as someone's pressing play.
It showed Sian quite clearly walking into the headlights of a vehicle that was facing her.
The room swelled in numbers as more people came in, and you just had so many pairs of eyes.
The car was stationary after she walked into those headlights for 1 minute 4 seconds.
Everyone's trying to get as much as they can from that minute of play.
By doing a house-to-house inquiry further down the street, we could establish that she hadn't walked past that point.
Even though you can't see her getting in the car, she must have got in the car. The car pulls away and Sian's no longer on the path. It's blatantly obvious that she got in that car.
The key thing was to take the limited CCTV footage of the car that we believe Sian had got into and get it into the hands of experts in identifying make and model. It was a Toyota Avensis 2007.
Police then obtained another piece of CCTV. On the side of the car, on the door frame, is a yellow square. What could this be? Could it be a taxi number? Then came the real breakthrough. A police officer had the idea of looking at all the police dashboard cameras that were patrolling central Swindon at that time. Just in the minutes before Sian vanished, one of the police cars had filmed a Toyota Avensis driving the other way, and it had the number plate.
The register keeper was a Christopher Halliwell. Christopher Halliwell lived locally in Swindon. He was a taxi driver. He was in a relationship and had 2 daughters and a son. Not an obvious suspect. We did a thorough examination of his fares picked up and movements. And Halliwell had ostensibly told the firm that he was booking off duty at about 1:30 in that morning.
But Halliwell never went home. Instead, the CCTV pictures show him driving around Swindon for another 90 minutes.
They knew he was lying. He was telling the taxi company, "I'm going home, I'm tired," and he wasn't.
I placed him under surveillance with a 12-vehicle crew augmented by use of the helicopter.
She has been used as the headquarters in the search for Sian O'Callaghan. She was meant to return to her boyfriend's home, but she didn't get there. She was last seen leaving...
He more or less lives in his vehicle, so that was a 24-7 surveillance commitment as he took taxi fares wherever he went.
The disappearance of a young woman.
During the Tuesday night, he was observed putting Sian O'Callaghan missing posters, sellotaping them into the back of his car. He was observed cleaning the rear of his vehicle behind the passenger seat with some blue fluid. He's seen depositing items in litter bins at various locations. We've recovered car seats and seat covers. He was burning things in the middle of the night, He's clearly destroying evidence. The question was asked of me by the surveillance commander, do you want us to move in, do you want us to arrest him? And the answer is, so you find forensic traces of Sean. Great. It won't help find Sean. It might help prosecuting him on suspicion of her disappearance, but it won't find Sean.
The decision not to arrest Halliwell, that takes colossal nerve. And it's an insight into what was driving Superintendent Fulcher, that Sean O'Callaghan was still alive.
We've got to hope that Halliwell returned to wherever he'd left her. She could be bound and gagged somewhere. We've got to find Sean.
If Sean was alive, D.S. Fulcher knew the time to save her was running out. Police had now been tracking Christopher Halliwell's movements for 24 hours, but he still hadn't led them to Sean O'Callaghan. Although more specific data from her mobile phone was narrowing the search area.
My new hypothesis was that the most likely location was a local beauty spot called Barbary Castle. My hunch was that this was the most likely place because it fits within the telephony data and is very close to Swindon.
The window for finding Sean alive was closing. So Fulcher came up with a high-risk plan to trap Halliwell into leading them to her. He began to release selected information to the media.
Dog teams. Police have narrowed the search area due to more specific information from Sean's phone.
I'd written a sequence of information releases which would indicate to him that we're closer and closer to finding Sean.
They describe digital hotspots, and these are the areas they're now focusing on.
We're trying to encourage Halliwell to return to wherever he's left Sean O'Callaghan. But the pressure of coming close to capture, people can act in all kinds of ways.
The very latest we have from the police says we're getting very close to identifying Sean's whereabouts.
He came out of his house, drove off, followed by the surveillance team. At about 10 o'clock, the officers surveilling him called up to say he's been into a chemist, he's bought an overdose quantity of pills. If he commits suicide, that's the end of Sean O'Callaghan's life.
Steve Fulcher thought, right, I can't risk him committing suicide. I'm going to have him arrested.
This was the moment of arrest, as a man was stopped on suspicion of kidnapping Sean.
There are quite strict rules about how police officers deal with suspects. They're governed by what's known as the PACE laws. They were brought in to prevent policemen putting words into people's mouths and generally making sure they're guilty before they've even reached trial. So when somebody has been arrested, they're cautioned, they're taken back to a police station, and they're given access to a lawyer. But Halliwell is arrested under suspicion of kidnap. Now, that allows the police to have what is called an urgent interview.
Where there's an immediate threat to life, it is perfectly legitimate for officers to interview parties on the ground without reference to solicitors or return to the police station.
When Halliwell was arrested, Steve Fulcher was at a police station across town. Conscious of the PACE rules about gathering police evidence, Fulcher told the arresting officers the questions they should ask.
The principal question was, is Sean still alive? Will you tell us where Sean is? His reply is no comment. So what was the right course of action at that point? According to the PACE, I should have had him taken to the police station, booked him in, and then, once he'd had access to legal advice, asking the same questions. Is she still alive? Where is she? But of course, the role of a solicitor acting on behalf of a client in custody is to prevent them incriminating themselves. It isn't a voluntary thing, it's their duty. That's how the law is written.
A discussion is then had in the office about whether or not this urgent interview can be extended by Steve Fulcher actually speaking to Halliwell. And Steve takes a decision that he will conduct an urgent interview of Halliwell himself and just says, right, let's go.
Deborah Peach came with me to record everything that is said and done so that I can demonstrate my decision-making to any subsequent court. I directed the officers who were transporting Halliwell to go to the place I considered most likely Sian to be, and that was Barbary Castle, and I'd meet them there. And the officers that were with Christopher Halliwell said, are you sure you want to do that? And I said, don't get wobbly on me. There were no other operational options available to me. There were none. It's a crime in action. It's a kidnap. And a girl's life is at stake. All I could do was plead with him. Plead with him for her life.
Follow me and write down everything I say.
Okay.
Hello, Chris. I'm Steve Fulcher. I'm leading this inquiry, and I'm looking for Sian O'Callaghan. Would you get out of the car and follow me?
Comes to a point where you have to look him in the eye yourself. Make that assessment.
Are you going to tell me where Sian is?
I want to go to the station.
He was obviously determined to make no comment. I know my rights. I want my solicitor. I'm not saying anything. I'm not doing anything to help you find Sian.
You can go to the station, but what will happen is that you'll be vilified in the press. But if you tell us where Sian is, they will have known you've helped me, and you'd have done the right thing.
Both of them were really calm. There were long silences. It was like this game was passing between them.
You think I did it?
I know you did it.
He reached the point at which his ability to maintain the line of silence was no longer sustainable.
Have you got a car? We'll go.
What he said was, have you got a car? We'll go. But it wasn't explicit, so we were entirely in his hands.
Personally, I didn't think this was going to work. I thought he'd toyed with us enough.
Debbie Peach sat in the front passenger seat, immediately in front of Christopher. It was only later that Debbie said, you know, she spent the entire journey fearing that he was going to lean forward with his handcuffed arms and rip her throat out. Well, I hadn't really thought of it in those terms, but it's a fair point.
slow down a bit.
Was it that point that I thought Steve Fulcher's done it? He's managed to persuade Christopher Halliwell to take us to Sean.
We were in this remote road with a deep 12-foot bank to our left side.
It was dark. I pushed it down the bank. Down there somewhere.
Finding Sian alive was still Steve's main objective.
I feared she was dead. I might even have believed she was dead. I didn't know she was dead until I found Sian, checked for vital signs, breathing, pulse. You've got to keep going. So I dropped a surveillance car off at one extremity, surveillance car at the other, calling search teams in to find Sian.
You will find her.
With the search teams arriving, he thought his job was done.
I felt the sense of gratitude. He had done what I considered to be the right thing. So I thanked him and explained that he would be given his rights, taken back to the police station.
You and I should have a chat.
He said, you and I should have a chat. Which was quite odd, actually. I asked a driver to get us off the road, and he ended up driving up the countryside track that takes you directly onto the tail of the Iron Age White Horse at Uffington. I interpreted you and I should have a chat as meaning that he would want some quid pro quo. I thought he would want a deal in terms of me catering for his family who were going to be affected by his incarceration, which was sure to follow.
My thoughts were he was about to do a runner, and I was looking around thinking how quickly he could make an escape.
And I just said, well, you know, what do you want to tell me? He asked for help. He said, what's the matter with me, Steve? I'm a sick fucker. Can I get help? I said, it's gone beyond that, Chris. And then he said,
do you want another one?
He's agreed, it would appear, to take me to another victim that he's responsible for, which is an extraordinary offer.
Are you sure you want to tell me this?
You're the man in charge.
He described another victim, a girl he'd taken from Manchester Road in Swindon, a prostitute. He couldn't tell me the year. He said it was either in 2003, 4 or 5. But he said that he could take me to the exact spot where he'd buried her.
At that stage, there's absolutely no doubt under Pace. Christopher Halliwell should have been charged on suspicion of murder, taken back to a police station and given access to a solicitor. Clearly, this second victim has been dead for some time. Therefore, the defence that it's a kidnap doesn't hold water.
I say, if somebody says, I've murdered somebody, your duty as a police officer is to recover the victim and the evidence associated with it. So I agreed to go with him.
It was a decision that would change Steve Fulcher's life forever.
We drove for about 45 minutes, trying to keep him in the moment. He showed me a list of girls who he has on his phone that trust him as their preferred taxi driver.
D.S. Fulcher had still not cautioned Halliwell, nor offered him access to a solicitor. With no prospect of finding a second victim alive, he knew he had a far weaker case for breaking police rules.
As a professional police officer, calculating the consequences of accepting a confession under these circumstances, how admissible is any admission going to be? How will this be perceived subsequently in court processes? Should I stop him confessing, place him under arrest and take him back into custody? What are the ramifications of that? Well, the ramifications are clear. We might never find out who another one is. Then he paced it out, one foot in front of the other. He showed me the exact position where he thought the body was. She's under here. That's how definitive he was. He was fully contrite. For that one moment in his life, I believe.
How did you finish it?
Strangled.
We had this quite surreal exchange. He knew full well that he's given the rest of his life away.
We're going to have to get you back to the Nick. You're going to have to tell us all this again.
I don't want to have to talk about it again, Steve.
I'm afraid you're going to have to, okay?
As Fulcher made his way back to the police station, he took the phone call he'd been dreading. The search teams had found Sian O'Callaghan's body.
The missing persons investigation into what happened to Sian O'Callaghan after she left a Swindon nightclub
is now a double murder investigation.
Earlier on today, they have confirmed two bodies.
One of them believed to be Sian O'Callaghan.
There's been a lot of activity here in Ashby Avenue this afternoon.
Police began searching a property belonging to a taxi driver arrested earlier on suspicion of kidnapping Sian.
I can remember exactly where everyone was sat in the room. Our liaison that had been with us most of the time was sat down. Another liaison stood up and she just said, "We found Sian and she is dead." And that was the exact words. I remember that very clearly.
On a cloudy night, in the absence of stars, the sky over Swindon lit up by the light of 1,000 lanterns.
I did go down to the lantern vigil. I went with a few friends and they sort of enabled me to remain anonymous. They sort of formed a circle so that I could see the lanterns and be a part of the vigil. And it was comforting.
Sian was a bubbly, friendly, caring and loving girl.
From the police side of things, they worked tremendously hard and they got a result very fast.
We would like to firstly thank Stephen Fulcher and his team for their inexhaustive work in finding and bringing Sian back to us so speedily.
It was seen as a textbook investigation without a shadow of a doubt.
When I went back into the police station, there was a line of senior officers who solemnly shook my hand as I went in.
Today, detectives investigating the murder of Sian O'Callaghan confirmed that a second set of human remains belonged to Rebecca Godden. She would have been 29 years old.
My daughter's been murdered.
I spent an hour or two with her mother. She told the story of Becky's life. It's a heartbreaking story.
2002 was the last time I saw Becky. And I said, "Becky, you've got to come home.
You have to come home. And she said, oh, Mum, I can't keep putting you through this. I'll come home when I'm clean.
Becky was a drug addict and a prostitute. Nobody wanted to help a drug addict. In fairness, I don't know how you can help a drug addict, because we tried with Becky and we didn't succeed.
We were told that Christopher Halliwell would go away for a very long time for a double murder. But then the roller coaster began.
The police were the only ones who knew that Halliwell had confessed to the murders without being cautioned. They'd assumed it would be a formality to get him to repeat what he'd told Steve Fulcher. When they got back to the station, it was clear that he would not.
He got himself a solicitor and was now offering no comment. I was both surprised and disappointed, because the bond that we'd formed and the contrition that he was demonstrating meant that I was quite convinced that he would repeat the confession.
You talked about it, and then silence. The confession was not made in the police station in front of a solicitor. You've only got the word of a policeman, and indeed a member of police staff who was taking notes. All that conversation, those vital confessions, disappeared.
Without those confessions, the case could fall apart at the trial, and Halliwell would walk free. 10 months after Steve Fulcher arrested Christopher Halliwell, the case was ready to go to trial. Despite questions about his own conduct in breaching police and criminal evidence guidelines, known as PACE, Steve Fulcher was confident that he'd acted correctly. But as proceedings began, Halliwell was still refusing to make a formal confession to the murders.
I was in court when Halliwell's lawyers suddenly sprung this quite shocking suggestion that the trial should not go ahead. That Steve Fulcher had broken the PACE laws. And as a result of that, all the information that he got, conversations with Christopher Halliwell, were to be inadmissible. They could not be put before a jury.
You have to have an appreciation of just how many rules he breached during the course of those 5 or 6 hours that he had Halliwell in his custody. I mean, they were multiple, they were serious, they were deliberate, they were extraordinary.
I understand that people did not want to give police officers carte blanche to breach PACE, and I don't advocate that course of action at all. But this is a very particular, very extreme set of circumstances.
The view in the courtroom was that D.S. Fulcher's actions had undermined justice for Sian.
I was cross-examined by one of the top QCs in the country for 2 days. He said, "Officer, this isn't about truth and justice. This isn't about guilt or innocence. This is about admissibility of evidence." The idea you could abstract those notions from a meaningful court process is, in my view, utterly ridiculous.
Yes, you can go to the station, but what will happen is that you'll be vilified in the press. D.S. Fulcher had said to him, "You'll be vilified by the press if you don't make this confession," and that was employed by the defence to show that the officer in question had engaged in oppression to get Halliwell to speak frankly with him.
"In 1 hour's time, you will be in the press."
I knew perfectly what Steve meant, as did Halliwell. Steve was saying, "Look, I can't control the media."
The point I made was, we got the whole media outside the police station. You're going to be taken into custody. They'll be doing a number on you. And if you're innocent, simply tell me, and you don't need that to happen. Now, that was twisted to suggest that I threatened to vilify him in the press, as if I could do such a thing, for one thing. I was following the National Kidnap Manual. To the letter. This is what you're required to do in kidnap situations. Prioritise the life of the hostage. If she was still alive, and I'd walked away, my offence would have been grotesque.
The judge ruled that any evidence given by Steve Fulcher as to his conversations with Christopher Halliwell were inadmissible. They could not stand and they would not be put to a jury.
She excluded both confessions on the basis that T.S. Fulcher's conduct had been improper, that he could have engaged in oppression to get the confessions that he did, and accordingly the evidence was unreliable.
But there was to be a further twist. After his confession, police searches had found forensic evidence. Sian's blood in Halliwell's taxi and traces of his DNA on her body.
Fortunately, that forensic evidence placed Christopher Halliwell with the body of Charlotte Callahan. So therefore, the judge ruled the trial could go ahead for Charlotte Callahan, based purely on that forensic evidence. But nothing could be said about Becky Godden whatsoever, and the charges against Halliwell for the murder of Becky Godden Edwards should be dropped.
I couldn't believe it. I was just soul destroyed. I thought, my daughter is a nothing. Halliwell was the criminal, not Steve Fulcher.
You've got two bodies there, you've given a confession. You're guilty then. Yeah, how can that? That's what I don't get. So I'd love someone to explain that to me. I don't know. How does that work?
A taxi driver jailed for life for the killing of a young nightclubber in Swindon has escaped charges for a second murder.
It was only months later, when Halliwell was convicted of Sian's murder, that the truth was made public. There would be no justice for Becky.
Police made crucial mistakes during Halliwell's confession. They failed to caution him properly, which meant despite admitting Becky's murder, the charge had to be withdrawn.
Questions are now being asked about the actions of Detective Superintendent Steve Fulcher.
An investigation by the Independent Police Complaints Commission concluded that Fulcher should face charges of gross misconduct. An independent panel arranged by Wiltshire Police found him guilty of breaching PACE guidelines and inappropriate contact with the media. He was given final warnings about both, but allowed to keep his job.
I can remember coming out of his conduct hearing. I was just, my God, I couldn't believe what the police had actually, what they were doing. They were hanging him out to dry.
The murder detective who caught a killer and was criticised by the police watchdog has resigned.
He's almost unemployable, certainly unemployable in any British police force. Although, of course, he was not sacked. It's certainly taken its toll on him.
I have a lot of sympathy for D.S. Fulcher. I can understand why he did what he did. But this was a bungled inquiry. This is an experienced police officer who chose deliberately. I mean, it wasn't ignorance on his part. It was a conscious decision by him to drive a coach and horses through a recognised police procedure.
I've lost my career. It destroyed my life, my finances, my family.
One thing came out of it. After the systematic destruction of Steve Fulcher, they decided then to reopen Becky's murder inquiry.
A fresh hunt for clues about the murder of Becky Godden. Police today began the forensic search of a house in Swindon, which they hope will yield missing evidence about what happened to Becky, who was last seen in December 2002.
Today's prompted a direct appeal to Halliwell behind bars to tell all.
This is your chance now. Come clean. Please. please. What have you got to lose?
Chris Halliwell was questioned again by a new lead officer about the Becky murder. And there's this footage of the interview. Halliwell seems to be offering police a deal.
I can resolve the matter, but I don't want you coming back every couple of years, every 5 years, every 10 years, whatever. With this, something like that. As if it goes to court and I'm found guilty, that's it. They're locking me up and throwing away the key.
He seems to be offering them the confession that he murdered Becky, but he wants to be left alone. And the police say, no deal, we can't do that.
Police still didn't have an admissible confession from Halliwell that he'd murdered Becky Godden. But then there was a breakthrough. Their reopened investigation discovered soil on a spade which placed Halliwell in the field where Becky was found. Becky's friends also gave evidence against him. This was enough to bring Halliwell back to court. In that court case, the judge ruled that because of his earlier conviction for Sian's murder, Halliwell's confessions were now admissible in his trial for Becky's. The case was now overwhelming, and Halliwell was found guilty after only 2 hours of jury deliberation. To the families of Becky and Sian, this new ruling suggested the PACE laws need to be looked at again.
It has been an extremely painful journey, but today we've received the justice that has felt like an eternity coming for our beautiful little girl, Becky.
My view is that I have brought two daughters back to their mother, and I've prevented other victims resulting from Halliwell's continued pursuit of his career as a serial killer.
Morally, I don't think there's any question over Steve doing what I think any family member would want an officer to do for them and for their family. But at the same time, I could also understand the legal ramifications of it as well.
He crossed the line, which he shouldn't have done. But I feel the line shouldn't be there.
There's some issues with the actual PACE guidelines itself that need to be changed so that there isn't any ambiguity in the future.
The current thinking in policing is that PACE is inviolable, and if the girl dies, so be it. They're wrong. What I did was right. PACE precisely provides for it, and the oath of office of a constable requires me to do this.
You have to look at the wider picture and say, all right, do we need to have a way of ensuring that the police powers are not abused, that people aren't bullied into making confessions?
But for my course of action, Becky would still be in that field. Sian would never be found, and Christopher Halliwell would be walking the streets.
People can talk about it, discuss it, weigh it all up, but ultimately for us, that can go on and on and on, but we haven't got Sian, and that's the hardest.